Hello and welcome to the CEO Blind Spot Show, where leaders lead leaders. I'm your host, Birgit Camps, and today's guest is Kurt Nock, who is an investor and founder of various companies, including Nox Vintage Records and Texas Ready. But besides that, he has actually been an entrepreneur since high school. Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Thank you for having me, Birgit. Good to be here with you.
Well, I'm so glad I got to meet you, as both of us are board members of a cybersecurity company. And that's where I got to see lots of clues as to why you've succeeded as an entrepreneur. But before we get started into your leadership insights, I am curious, what inspired you to go into business after choosing to get a degree in wildlife biology from Texas A&M?
Well, actually, I was born with a couple of genetic traits. I've always been a collector of things. And I have always been an entrepreneur. So ever since I've been a young child, I've collected all sorts of things over the years, coins, stamps. Kids in my generation did that. We were all collecting one thing or another. So that wasn't really unusual. But what was unusual is that I was also an entrepreneur. Most collectors don't make very good entrepreneurs, but that mix in my life has really set the pattern for everything that's followed. And it's just been a lot of fun. I did go to Texas A&M University and graduated with a degree in wildlife biology.
I mean, you could have chosen anything.
No, I started out as a physics major. And after one semester of that, I realized that that was just not fun. And so I got the student catalog and I just went through it page by page and picked out what looked like it would be the funnest thing to do. And so that's what I settled on. I never expected to use my degree. I was actually there on a full scholarship, and it was expected I would go to Texas A&M, which I really am glad that I did. But my sights were always set on running my own businesses. I didn't really expect that I would learn anything at college that would help me with that. I did take a couple of business courses, but it was just one of those chapters of my life. I graduated and actually did wind up using the degree unexpectedly for a period of time. But my life has always just been in small business.
And then you founded Wildlife on Wheels and, you know, then ended up selling it to the Houston Museum of Natural Science. Then from there on, I guess you moved on to start different type of companies. Is that right?
Yeah. After graduating from A&M, I went to work at the Museum of Natural Science as a curator, just to kind of get my bearings here in Houston and set the stage for whatever business I was going to go into, which I didn't know at the time. But I did start the Wildlife on Wheels program because the museum was running a traveling wildlife show, and I just thought I could do a better job. So I resigned from there, started my own show, and I sold that business to the museum about 8 years later. But the other business that I started at the same time was called Memory Machines, where we were selling mechanical and musical antiques. That eventually morphed into what is now called Nox Vintage Records, where I specialize in vintage sound recordings made from the 1890s to the 1950s. And we're now the largest company in the world that does that.
Yeah, not only that, but didn't you also get nominated for 2009 Grammy because of some Edison cylinder entitled Polk Miller and His Old South Quartet?
So that was a real surprise. A friend of mine calls me up. He says, hey, go online and click here and click here and click here. So I did. And it says Kurt Nock nominated for 2009 Grammy. It's like, where the heck did that come from?
Yeah.
I definitely didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
But it's just one of the many wonderful experiences that I've had in my business career that, you know, just totally a surprise, but a great blessing and a lot of fun and just a cool experience.
And then you also formed Texas Ready to help people be self-sufficient with food. So you clearly know how to start businesses and succeed in them. But how did you learn to lead well?
Well, that's a great question. I think you just stumbled into my blind spot.
Tell me about
it. I'm an entrepreneur, and entrepreneurs oftentimes don't make great managers. And a reason for that, we're perfectionists. Very often, we like things done our way. We feel like we know the best way of doing things, even if we don't. We would rather go out there and do something ourselves than try and spend the time to try and train somebody to do it and then come along later and have to redo it to the way that we would have done it. And so managing people is not something I've ever been good at because I wind up getting frustrated, and frustrated sometimes is just the lower level character flaw. It can become critical spirit and condescension, ultimately, you know, it's born out of a sense of pride and arrogance, which, you know, I got to confess, have always been at the part of my life and something I've had to deal with and work on.
And Kurt, how did you first know that you were that way? Did someone quit? Did someone tell you?
No, you know, I don't even remember anybody quitting. I guess I wasn't all that bad. It was nevertheless a part of the mix at times. And I know that the people who worked for me, they would get frustrated because they could see that they weren't performing at a level that I really wanted. Mm-hmm. And when you're an entrepreneur, I mean, all my businesses have been, well, not all, but the ones that you've mentioned have been very successful. And I've been very blessed with that. But they've never been huge businesses. You know, I could have gone to business school, like you said. I could have gotten a degree and been a CEO of some big company. But that's not what I want to do. I want to do what interests me. Just like when I picked the wildlife biology degree plan at A&M, I wanted to go out and chase lizards on weekends. I didn't want to sit around working physics problems.
Yeah,
that was the whole deal. I want to have fun. If I got to do something my entire life, then I better be having fun doing it or I've made a big mistake. So I choose to do things that I'm interested in, that I very likely would do anyway as a hobby. And so I'm not getting into huge businesses. So my staff might be maybe a half a dozen people, but that's it. I'm lean and mean in what I do. I don't like spending a lot of money on anything, including payroll.
I heard that you have a truck that has 400,000 miles on it and it's like 20 years old.
Yeah, I bought a truck back in the 90s, which I continue to run today. It's a great truck. I keep it up and I travel coast to coast buying collections in that thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't spend money on me. I drive an old used car. I live in a very small old house that I moved onto my property. I spend money growing my business. And honestly, what gives me the greatest joy is to be able to take money and turn it over to ministries and individuals who are promoting the kingdom of God. That's kind of what this whole business thing is all about. It's just a way for me to contribute to a much greater degree with the things that God is doing in this world.
Well, it sounds to me like you're pretty aware of, you know, possibly where you struggle as a leader. And it sounds like maybe you could read it on people's faces that they could tell that they were frustrated with how you were leading them.
Right. And, you know, they understand me too. I mean, because we are small operations, we get to become family. And, you know, we just kind of roll with each other's personalities and, you know, give a lot of grace. And we wind up having a great time and a great business relationship. And I try and take care of my employees and therefore there's a lot of loyalty there.
Yeah. In fact, a positive blind spot might be that you really attract people that have the same values. And in fact, I read on Texas Ready that it's founded on the model of capitalism, freedom, independence, integrity, self-sufficiency, preparedness, and civic responsibility. And sounds like everyone you're involved with aligns there. So that's probably the glue that keeps everyone together, right?
Yeah, I would say that that's so. I've been very blessed to be able to find really great people. Yeah, if they don't adhere to those sorts of principles, they aren't going to get hired to begin with. And if I do hire them and they don't have that, they probably aren't going to last very long.
Yeah. So, you know, here you say you're not necessarily the greatest leader. And at the same time, you took on hiring your dad. How did you manage that?
Yeah. Well, that was kind of a necessity. My father was one of 3,000 people laid off from Tenneco in the 80s in the oil bust here in Houston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was an older man and, you know, he was just not going to get another job as a chemical engineer at that stage in his life, especially when there were so many people just like him out there also needing employment. And ultimately, I wound up hiring him because he just really needed a job. And you're right, man. It is tough hiring a family member.
Especially if it's your dad.
Especially if it's your dad, right. And so, you know, we had our struggles early on, but that went on for probably 10 or 15 years, I don't remember. But we ultimately became so close and had such an amazing relationship. And I came to depend on him for the things that he was doing in the business that I didn't really have time to deal with or a desire to do that. And he just took it over and it was great. And I am so glad that we had that opportunity because it really brought us together in a way that we probably wouldn't have otherwise.
How did you turn that situation around then from it being tough to having it work out?
We both had to extend each other a lot of grace, a lot of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. There were some blow-ups. My dad loved to do things kind of the way that he was kind of like the way I am. He always thought he had a better way of doing things, but I don't think his way necessarily was better. And so I'd come back from a 2-week buying trip and I'd find something going on in the shop. It's like, what are you doing here? Come on. And so we had a couple of those kind of situations, and he realized that, you know, it probably was not a good idea to be doing big stuff like that without my knowledge and consent. So once he kind of backed down from that, I think we got along very well.
Okay. Well, you've been through, several decades of ups and downs in business. So what tip do you have for new entrepreneurs who might, you know, deal with crisis?
Well, in light of what we've been talking about in terms of my perspective into the lives of others, their abilities, and so forth, I would just say that we need to understand that other people who we don't really necessarily relate to in the way that our personalities work may still be very capable, very intelligent, very beneficial to the company, but they're just wired a little different. And that doesn't mean that they're better or worse or any of that. It's just, I mean, you know, we're all different, right? Mm-hmm. And I find that as I'm aging, I'm seeing a little bit more of that because, you know, my mind isn't as quick as it once was. I don't remember things that I like to. I have a greater understanding for people who can't move as fast or lift as much or work as hard as I do, because I'm now getting to that point. And so I'm growing in my empathy towards others, my understanding of what makes them tick. And I would just suggest, you know, if you're able to do so, don't wait until you get an older person to start figuring this stuff out, but love and accept people for where they are. Try and work with them where they're from. You can't always do that. Sometimes you got to let somebody go. They're not fitting what you need. But if they are, or if they can be moved in that direction, then just give them grace, give them an opportunity to prove themselves and to move into their niche within the organization.
Yeah. Well, and then it sounds to me like when there's crisis, you start a new business, because Texas Ready, in a way, is a response to, you know, we don't know what the future holds food-wise, supply chain-wise.
Well, yeah. Well, I started Texas Ready because I met my partner, Lucinda, and we hit it off very well. And she was telling me about the situation in our world and how things were going to get worse and not better. And I didn't really have time for that. I had way too much going on, too much on my plate. But as time went by, I came to understand what she's talking about and realized that our country and our world is facing some great challenges. And, you know, I personally believe that we're moving into the last days of the last days, as the Bible talks about. And if that's true, the Bible gives us a very clear picture of what that's going to look like. And so I realize that people are not going to be buying old records one of these days. They're going to have more pressing concerns in mind. And as an entrepreneur and someone who is responsible and wants to plan for their future and the future of those individuals that God has placed me over, I need to move in the right direction. And so Lucinda and I formed Texas Ready because, you know, we're teaching people how to grow food and become food self-sufficient. And that's been a great business. And certainly when COVID hit, it performed just as we expected it to. We did more business in that 1 year than we did in all the years prior to that. So now I got to two businesses that I'm running, which is really much more than I want to be doing right now. I feel like God is calling me into some other areas. So if any of your listeners are interested in buying an absolutely great vintage record operation, they would be more than welcome to give me a call.
Yeah. And they can go to 78rpm.com to discover even more about that. And if they want to know more about becoming food self-sufficient, they can go to texasready.net. Kurt, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and your honesty. You know, I do wonder if some of your leadership style, I'll just say, might come because of your family history, right? Because from what I understand, you know, you are the great, great grandson of Pink Higgins, who apparently was, they call him the good, bad man in the days.
Yes. Yeah. I have terrific genetics from both sides of my family, not genetics, I would say character. People from both sides who were just really, really good guys. And my great, great grandfather, Pink Higgins, was an amazing man. He was a hired gun. If you were having trouble with cattle rustlers on your ranch, you'd call Pink and he'd come straighten that out for you. And his son, my great grandfather, was a Texas state judge who was assassinated as a result of a ruling in a particular case. So I've got some very colorful people in my family, and I'm very, very happy to be able to have inherited some of those qualities that made them special and successful in their lives.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for sharing all those insights with us today.
Thank you, Birgit, for letting me come on CEO Blind Spots and share a little bit about my story.